Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Welcome to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I am your host, your leader, and, of course, your know-it-all guy of sports for the next 2 hours. We're going to walk you through everything that's happened in the last year, 2012. Can you believe that this is the final show of 2012? We've had a lot of exciting sports stories, and we could by no means put a show together in a two-hour time frame that talks about all of the great stories of 2012. But also, 2012 was a great year for The Balance. So what we've done today is we've put together a show, and we're going to be talking right hanging by in the wings with us here in just a moment is Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. He's going to be talking with us about the racing season of 2012. We got some things that we're going to talk about. And also, here at The Balance, you know, we had some great interviews and we had some great sports stories and great things that The Balance covered as well. So we're going to get into that as well. I hope everyone had a great holiday. Myself, it was a fantastic time down in North Carolina. What I am going to tell you, though, is if you ever drive down the Virginia Turnpike, just don't look down. My goodness. If you've ever driven that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, guys, we got to take a break. We get back, we're going to jump right into what happened in 2012 with Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. We're going to be talking about what's coming up in 2013 in the racing season as well on Radio Speed Talk and here on The Balance. We'll be right back right here on The Balance.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom, Mark Rochelle, Presidente. So glad that you guys could join us on the very last show of 2012. My goodness, where has the year gone? Joining us now is Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. Mr. Tanner, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, my friend. How about you, Ben?
Man,
you're right. 2012 is crazy, crazy year for sports, Ben.
Man, I tell you what, it's been one of those years where we could do a four-hour show and probably still not cover everything. So talk to us about Radio Speed Talk in 2012. Obviously, you guys saw some changes and some switcheroo gurus on some things going on your show. Talk to us about what has changed in 2012 and what's going on forward in 2013 for Radio Speed Talk.
Well, I got to tell you, it's definitely been a roller coaster ride this year. Yeah, there were some changes. Pete LaFuchsia and I parted ways. He went on and did his thing, and we picked up Mr. Kenny Barr, who is a guru of knowledge, been racing all along. And we've added Tom Wolf, who knows quite a bit about that. So we got a three-way show going, and I didn't mean that in a bad way. So I'll get it out of there. You know, we changed our focus a little bit. We're going to, you know, basically spend half the show talking about national stuff, and we're getting into more of the regional, the state, you know, local stuff, and some of the up-and-comers, ARCA and you know, Indy Lights and some of those, and, you know, that's, you know, the partnership is getting stronger with you guys because you're going to help us out with all that. And, you know, as a matter of fact, this week we're playing the interview that you and Kenny did with Roger, which was an awesome interview, by the way. And there's just a lot of cool things going. I think 2013 is going to bring more excitement as we get, you know, our niche with the new group together. We've been at it for, what, 2 or 3 months now, and it's coming around. So, you know, I'm looking forward to having a good time. And, you know, of course, we'll be working together on that as well.
Well, absolutely. We love being a part of the gang, as we like to say, and we like to scratch each other's back as well. Well, we talk about some of the great things that happened over in 2012, and we've got a lot to get to, so I kind of want to just go through these and touch on these and get your thoughts on these. Now, I've got my own list. I know you sent me over a list, so feel free to interject here. But certainly, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is I kind of made a list of five things, and in a moment, we're going to go to a soundbite, a clip from an interview. Kenny Barr was actually part of this interview, Walter Cox, and the actual cameraman from ESPN that got all of those great shots of Clint Bowyer and Jeff Gordon. So we're going to get to that here in just a moment. But we talk about NASCAR. Daytona's 500 was one for the books. And you think about it. One of the things that happened over there in 2012, and I love doing these end-of-the-year shows because, one, it really is a fun show to do, but it's also fun to recap because you start thinking about things. Wow, I had totally forgot about that news story. Although this story that I put on one in my top five, these are no particular order, one, two, three, or four, or five. It just happened to be the way in which I wrote them down on the list. So they may not be the top story, but one of the stories, obviously it's you guys' favorite things to joke about off the mic, is NASCAR's Daytona 500 was really one for the books. After a rain delay push the race to Monday night, one Pablo Montoya's Chevy broke as it went around the track under caution, slamming into the back of a jet dryer truck, blowing the track clean. So that, to me, is one of the top racing stories of 2012. So what are your thoughts? I know you guys joke about it a lot off the mic, so I know you remember this story. What are your thoughts, and anything you want to input on that story?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, Kenny and I fight over this, and you know, we get a crew chief, Steve Minnick Sr., on quite a bit. And I still say that one, Pablo just, and you know what? We brought this up on the show last week, too. It's time to just go to Juan Montoya. Get rid of the Pablo. No, nobody in NASCAR has three names anymore. Come on, let's get over it. I still say that he drove crazy. He drove crazy out of the pits. That, you know, of course, the technical guys tell me, no, it broke. There's no way he could handle it. But man, I'll tell you what, that, I still today, once in a while, we'll plug that in and watch it again, and I'm still in disbelief, and I still can't get Roger Curtis to tell us who's paying for that, because that was that jet driver did come from Michigan International Speedway, so I'm kind of wondering. And one of the things that I didn't think about till after you guys got done interviewing is probably somebody should have asked if Michigan International Speedway is going to keep their equipment home just in case this time.
Well, you should have texted it to me, because I would have asked when I had him on the air. Well, I want to go through some of these other things on my list here. And here's the thing, you know, living here in Indianapolis, obviously I have the great privilege of having the Indianapolis 500 track and the IMS right here in my backyard. So I'm down there all the time. So a lot of the things that we cover here at The Balance certainly circle around the Indianapolis 500 and IndyCar. But one of the largely unknown stories is Tomoka Soto. Nearly put his name in the record books by trying to pass Dario Franchitti for the lead in the last lap of the Indianapolis 500. Obviously, that was a great Indianapolis 500 as well, with the remembrance of Dan Weldon as well. But if Soto has succeeded, he would have been the first Japanese driver to win the legendary race. Instead, Soto spun out. And if you remember, hit the wall in turn one with Franchitti going to win his third Indianapolis 500. Thoughts?
I got to tell you, man, that was one of the most awesome moves I had ever seen. Unfortunately, he lost control of that. And you know, that race goes back to what I said. You know, earlier in the year we talked about that. I think the IRL needs to seriously consider going to green-white checker, because I got to tell you, Kanaan was coming on strong, and I think had they had the green-white checker, we would have seen another great finish there too. But Soto, man, I got to tell you, he came out of nowhere to get back up there, and that move he made, he just couldn't handle it. But you know, you're going against Dario Franchitti, who, you know, could handle that with his eyes closed, handle a car like that. And man, I got to tell you, that would have been so cool to see Soto win that. But you know, it's still one of the best racing moves I've seen in a long time.
Oh, absolutely. And we talk a little bit more about IndyCar. Will Power obviously had the championships in his series, and that wasn't to be. We could certainly, one of the things we could get into is that. Another great story, I thought, was Antoine Brown, former motorcycle racer who switched to the Top Fuel dragsters. Obviously, the two of us, we talk a lot NHRA here on the show, and he switched to the Top Fuel dragsters drag racing premier series and won the National Hot Rod Association's Full Throttle Series Top Fuel title at the season finale in Pomona. Brown thus became the first African-American to capture the major U.S. Motor Racing Championship as well. Well, without further ado, I wanted to talk with this, you know, and this actually happened on the same day, ironically enough. NASCAR once again made national headlines, this time for the melee in Phoenix, or WWE, and we had a great opportunity to have the cameraman on the air with us just the week after that, and with ESPN Walter Cox, a good friend of ours, one of the pit reporters for ESPN, and he was able to hook us up with us, and we talked about it here on the show there. I think we have an ESPY in the works on this one. We're going to listen to this portion of that interview. A guest with you, his name is Jake Blau?
Yes, Blau.
Why don't you tell us about your guest there, sir?
Yes, sir. As you know, we was down in the middle of it in Phoenix, and my cameraman, we was out on pit road. Clint Boyer gets out of his car. And my cameraman's on top of his game all the time. So he sees him, and Clint takes off running, so he takes off running. But now you got to understand, it's not only just a cameraman. There's a cord connecting to a pole that another guy is carrying. And that's what shoots the signal from the camera up to the compound. So it's two guys running in tandem, trying to keep up with Clint without falling down and getting the shot, taking one for the team. I mean, it was just an awesome job. And I have them here with me, and I'd like to introduce them to you. You and your minions out there, this is my cameraman, Jake Blue. I'm handing off the phone.
Hey, Jake, how you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How's it going?
Hey, Jake. Jake, welcome to the Balanced National Sports Talk Show. We have fun talking racing every single week. So you were ringside at WWE NASCAR style. Tell us what happened, and don't leave out any of the good stuff.
No, it was a crazy scene. I just happened to be going towards the garage because the fight already kind of was breaking out. So I started kind of heading that way, and the directors and producers, everybody screaming. And as I turn around to go towards the garage, I see Clint just in a full sprint. And I'm just like, oh, here we go. My instincts just take over. And I'm connected to another pointer pole, which another guy's carrying. His name's Robbie. And I look at him, and we just kind of had that look in my eye, and we took off literally in a dead sprint. And I'm just thinking, well, nobody got hurt. We didn't go fall. I mean, it's just so many variables that worked out, and it made a great-looking shot. And it was an unbelievable scene. Chaos everywhere, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, we watched it all here in Indianapolis, and you didn't miss a beat, that's for sure. Kitty, we're also joining by Kitty Barr of Radio Speed Talk, which is my partner in crime to talk racing every Saturday morning. Kitty, we got Walter Cox from ESPN, and his friend and cameraman Jake Blue is right down in the midst of it all. You can't get a better eyewitness to the events than that. So, Kitty, what are your questions for Jake and Walter?
I don't know if I have any questions, but I have a definite opinion for Jake and his partner who did all the legwork keeping up with Boyer. Whoever gives away cinematic awards or ESPYs at the end of the year, they deserve them hands down. That was really cool, you guys keeping up with him. That's an endorsement for 5-hour energy for both Boyer and those two guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, maybe we can get you guys some Twinkies or something.
There you go. Yeah, I think they're going out of business, so we better stock up.
We better stock up. Well, Jake, I know you're very, very busy, and I know Walter's hard to keep up with. Hopefully today, I mean, this weekend won't be any retaliation. We're going to get into that conversation here in just a few moments. But, Jake, is there any final thoughts? I mean, what was going on? I mean, did you guys just kind of know? Was this something that – okay, guys, we're going to position ourselves because we think, you know, it's kind of like meet me after school behind the Burger King. Or did you guys just kind of happen to be at the right place at the right time?
You know, it was so much going on, and bottom line is I just happened to be in the right place at the right time because we had there's four cameras like me down there. There's four RFs, wireless cameras. So we're all kind of spread out, and the directors and producers are kind of – they wanted to send one guy to the garage and – There was so much screaming and yelling and such a chaotic scene that you just got to react. And I happened to be standing there when Clint started running towards the garage. And, I mean, it was just mayhem. I mean, the cops were pushing and shoving. There was fans back there because NASCAR allows fans to with credentials to walk in the garage. And it was just so much pushing and shoving and yelling. And, it was how it unfolded was not scripted by any means. It just was all instincts.
Well, Jake, we appreciate you taking some time to join us here on The Balance today. I know you got work to do. We're going to talk to Walter for a few more minutes about the race at hand. I don't know that we'll have a sequel, but it was kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime events.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you one thing, your shot will be played in highlights for generations to come.
Oh, man, it means a lot to me. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, our piece of Walter Cox there, a little bit of that interview. Obviously, that went on, and you can hear it on the archives on iTunes or on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. So, Mr. Cliff Tanner, eyewitness view there. Obviously, we watched it on television. What are your thoughts, Clint and Jeff Gordon, WWE NASCAR style?
Well, I got to tell you, that kid doesn't deserve just an ESPY. He needs to get the highest honor you can get. Maybe some kind of a Nobel Prize out of that one, or the video Pulitzer or whatever. But man, I got to tell you that was just a crazy situation. I have never, I love to be on Twitter during race day. I got to tell you, but my God, I wish I could have seen. You know, what kind of statistics came up, but the Twitter world lit up on that whole situation. And I tell you what, the sad part is a lot of people gained a lot more respect for Clint Boyer, and Jeff Gordon really ticked off a lot of people that day.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Well, you know, also another thing I wanted to talk about, and again, and maybe this isn't in a lot of people's books as one of the top stories, if you will, of 2012, but certainly one of the great interviews that we had in 2012 with the Balance Todd Lesko, NHRA driver. And if you remember this right, Cliff, we talked with him right here on the show. We talked with him numerous times, and if you remember, and we're going to go ahead and post up on our Twitter the YouTube video about this explosion. And we're going to post that on Twitter. I think Michelle's going to get it up here in just a few moments. But go to Twitter and our Facebook, and you'll be able to see the explosion. But the explosion that happened at Lucas Oil with Todd Lesko, actually, we interviewed him just a couple weeks prior to that. And we talked with him about that very same thing, certainly not knowing or foreseeing that. And one of the things that you and I and Pete and Kenny, I mean, had the opportunity. I don't know. Kenny wasn't there at Lucas. Had the opportunity to talk with Jack there at Lucas about the very same thing and about the explosion. And of course, we saw what happened with his explosion as well. So we're going to play a little bit of that interview with Todd Lesko, talking about what happens in the part of an explosion. Do you remember that, Cliff?
I sure do.
Okay, we're going to play a little bit of that interview. This is us, the Balance, talking with Todd Lesko, who was on the show with us just a week or two prior to that huge explosion that happened out at Lucas. Right now on the line, Mr. Todd Lesko, NHRA professional driver, Jim Dunn Racing Nitro Funny Car. Todd, welcome to the Balance for the very first time. How are you doing, sir?
Great, thank you. Thank you very much. Having a so far pretty good day out here in Chicago. We're qualifying at Joliet this weekend, and the weather's hot and sticky, but it's fast.
I tell you what, it has been hot. We're here in Indianapolis, and it has been hot, 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 hot here the last couple of days, and we've hit temperatures up to 104 degrees. So, and I tell you what, I'm sure with your fire suit and all your gear and inside your car there, I'm going to tell you what, it's probably a lot hotter inside of there. So I don't envy you at all. As much as I would like to be the guy behind that, I don't envy you at all. So tell us a little bit about what's going on up there in Chicago, guys, and we're looking forward to you making it down here to Lucas Oil later on in the year.
Yeah, well, you know that I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and I arrived into Chicago on Thursday, and the weather was the same thing, about 104 degrees, and the humidity is probably 110%. I hopped out of the airplane, and I started to melt just like a wax candle.
Oh, wow.
We carried on yesterday, and yesterday, first thing in the morning, we're not qualifying until later in the afternoon, 5 and 8. Well, we about noontime, it's just a horrendous storm. The clouds were green. We thought for sure we were in somewhere in Tornado Alley, but fortunately the rain went over, cooled the track off a little bit, and cooled the temperature off to somewhere around 85, 90 degrees, so, and the track was cooled off. The first qualifying round was pretty good, but at nighttime, the top fuel cars, of course, the funny cars go first, and then the top fuel cars go after us, so the weather came around, the track came around. They ran some tremendous numbers last night. I was just leaving the racetrack, and I heard Spencer Massey ran 328 miles an hour, so they were hauling the mail last night for sure.
Well, obviously, you're doing a great job, and I tell you what, you have an impressive resume. As I look through the information here that was provided to us by your people, you're having a fantastic season as well. And obviously, you're owned by Hall of Famer Jim Dunn, who celebrated 60 years this year in the sport back in 2009. So obviously, you're with somebody that knows what they're doing. So what kind of support is he giving you? Is he giving you any type of helpful tips, and what are some of the things that you can attribute Jim Jones Racing to your success?
Yeah, well, you know, this year is my rookie year in the NHRA as far as driving a top fuel funny car. I've been in the nostalgia ranks for quite a few years, but I came up to the big league this year, and Jim's tremendous. He's a great tuner, and he's also a really good hand in giving me every situation that possibly could occur. In actual fact, before the car leaves, he'll say, you know, the car's going to do this, it's going to do this.
And by golly, every time that occurs, it really does happen. And you know, he's really good. I'm a licensed technician by trade. That's the business I'm in Canada. So I mean, we sit and look at the computer, and we kind of understand and discuss every lap by lap. So it's really interesting. We've unfortunately had some mechanical failure in the last few runs here, but we're working hard to make sure everything gets back. But Jim is definitely the whole Dunn family is phenomenal. They're a race family that's raced together for 45 years, and everybody gets along really well. And it's a real pleasure to drive for the Dunn family.
Well, we're talking with Todd Lesko, who obviously made his debut here in 2012 in the Full Throttle Series, racing for Jim and Dunn Racing, Nitro Funny Car. One question for you: how long has Grime Boss been a sponsor of the car there?
Well, we just acquired the Grime Boss sponsorship. I would suggest within the last 60 days, we've been working on a deal with them, and I actually met the Grime Boss people in Pomona. They were walking around it, and at the time, probably looking and watching and understanding the capabilities of marketing in the NHRA, and it's amazing. I believe the staggering numbers are like 11 million people watch NHRA every second weekend when they're running, and it's so they were trying to understand what their market share could be, and I guess they, just because of the family and our success, they chose Jim Dunn Racing to utilize as a marketing tool in the NHRA.
Now, you used to own a tire store. Am I correct on that?
I still do. Yeah, I'm involved with a company in Western Canada called Fountain Tire, and we've got 150 locations from the Vancouver Island to Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Well, I tell you what, I know the IndyCar series are up there in Toronto this week, so I love Canadians. Good friend of mine, James Hinchcliffe from over at the IndyCar series. You Canadian drivers all sit together. Tagliani, and you fit in that loop there somewhere?
Yeah, you know, it's we're proud to be Canadian. It's a wonderful country. We're kind of underpopulated, and unfortunately, for my particular sport, we don't have any events, NHRA pro full throttle events in Canada, but there's some that are really close to the border, and they're well attended by Canadians. And I really appreciate the fact that the Canadians stand behind me in my quest to be the top NHRA driver.
Well, you're certainly well on your way. And one thing I want to talk with you a little bit, obviously you guys come every year here to Indianapolis, which obviously Indianapolis is the king city when it comes to racing. Everybody wants to come to Indianapolis. But, you know, people know NASCAR, people know IndyCar. A lot of people don't really know or understand NHRA, and so much so they don't. A lot of them don't really even know the difference between a nitro funny car, a dragster, you know, and so forth. So, real quickly, if you could give us a real quick rundown, if you can, and simplify it for our minions, what is a nitro funny car as opposed to some of the other NHRA cars?
Well, a nitro funny car, it's a 8,000 horsepower motor that the driver sits behind the motor. It's 125 inch wheelbase. It's in the day they were called floppers. The reason they were called funny cars is because they're an original OEM car that's been stretched and modified to fit over 125 inch chassis, but they're very specific to the width and the length and the height. It's very stringent, the rules we have to meet to have the car so that it's not aerodynamically changed to a point where it becomes advantageous. So basically, some people are familiar with the dragster, which is a 300 plus inches wheelbase. Ours is 125 inch wheelbase. We have the same power plant, we have the same tires, we basically have the same transmissions as a dragster. So it makes it quite a bit more difficult to drive that particular automobile compared to the dragster because of the short wheelbase, and also the fact you're sitting behind the motor.
You know, that was you couldn't have segued more into that next question. You're behind the freaking motor. I mean, that's got to give some vibrations like no G forces ever. And what I want to know is when you get in there and you go off, and this is just a few seconds, obviously, but when you go from point A to point B, how fast is your heart beating when you get to point B?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people ask me that question, and the fact of the matter is that we're strapped down pretty tight. We've got a neck restraint on, and, you know, we're strapped in there pretty tight. I think if you ask most drivers, I mean, of course, it's a shot. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we go from 0 to 300 miles an hour in 4 seconds. So, I mean, the math is that we're accelerating quicker than anything on Earth. But the fact of the matter, I think the analogy that I typically use is that bull riders ride and funny car drivers drive. I mean, you have the car has its own mind. You can be on the same track, the same time, and every lap, every run will be different. There's nothing that's the same in any two runs. So it's more of a control issue than it is a thrill of acceleration.
Well, all right, that's Todd Lesko, part of our one of our shows in 2012. As we know, Cliff, just a few weeks after this interview, and you certainly can go to our website or iTunes and listen to the entire interview. But basically, he goes on to talk about what the procedure and what are some of the things that go on in the event of a wreck. So it was a great interview that we had. Cliff. Now, you remember that, and obviously we've got the video posted up on all of our social media sites now. You can go and watch the explosion. But what are your thoughts about that? Yeah, we had him on the show just 2 weeks prior to just a very close call with his maker.
Well, I got to tell you what, man. You know, a lot of people see bad NASCAR drivers and see them turn and toss and all that. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's not a bad accident. But you get behind even the nitro cars, the top fuels, any of those guys. I mean, you have no time to react, period. When that thing blows, it blows. I can't even imagine what would go through a guy's mind as soon as that hits. It's a very dangerous sport, and luckily we haven't lost that many people. And, you know, they're just like NASCAR. They always push on safety issues. But, man, you talk about reaction time and, you know, I've seen that happen to John Force. I think it was last year. His blew off like that, and you could just see his eyes get as big as 50 cent pieces. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know. Yet they get back in and keep on going. And, you know, that's just part of it. But, you know, that guy is going to have a good career. Anytime you get with Dunn Racing, I can guarantee it. Dunn, you know, teaches that kid how to react, how to do whatever. And, I mean, that was just a phenomenal explosion for him to walk away and still get back in that car. That boy's got some cojones like nobody else.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, that's going to have to wrap up our segment, Mr. Cliff. I appreciate you being a part of our best of sports show of 2012. I hope 2013 is a fantastic year for you. One thing, though, Cliff, you haven't been on this show since we started doing this with everybody. But one of the things that 2012 brought us was one of the biggest dance craves ever. So what I want to know, Cliff, can you? Uh-huh. 2012 brought us the Gangheim. I want to know, are you able to do the Gangheim, my friend?
Won't even do it, man. You know, and I don't want to get into the political part of it, but for what he did, I think that thing needs to be taken off the airwaves and gone away.
I agree. I wish that we were a political show sometimes. But it was one of the big day. You know, we'll get into this later on in the show, but I do have a bet with Sparky regarding the Super Bowls. One of us are going to be down at Monument Circle doing this on Monument Circle in a flash dance sort of way. So it will be up on YouTube and that sort of stuff. Well, real quick, Cliff, what's going on tomorrow on Radio Speed Talk? We got to take a break and get back and talk some college sports.
Well, Kenny's had a pretty good, interesting Do You Know that turned out to be a huge segment. Again, we're playing the interview. We had to break it down into two segments with you and Kenny and Roger Curtis from Michigan International Speedway. And we just talk a little bit about, you know, some of the big stories at the end of the year, just like you did here. It's actually a pretty good show, and I think you'll like it. And 2013 is going to bring great things for all of us. I just feel it.
All right, Radio Speed Talk tomorrow. We'll be right here on the Balance Radio Network immediately following the Colts game. Kenny, good luck to you, and we'll see you again next year, sir.
All right, buddy. Sounds good.
All right. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk. We're going to take a break. We'll get right back. Right around the corner, Jimmy the Intern, $2 Bill Josh, and Pete LaFuchsia is going to be joining us to talk about some of the top college sports stories of 2012.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
The University of Notre Dame proudly presents its marching band, the Band of the Fighting Irish.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Saul Mark Lizell, Presidente. It is Saturday morning. It is the very last Saturday of 2012. We're bringing you the best of all sports stories of 2012. We just got off the phone with Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk, talking about some of the top racing stories of 2012, and we played a little bit of some of the interviews that we had throughout the year in 2012. Well, joining us now, jump right into the college conversation, waiting on Jimmy the Intern, but joining us as well as Mr. Pete LaFuchsia and $2 Bill Josh. Josh, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great this morning. How are you, Tom?
Fantastic. Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, how are you, sir?
I am enjoying this weather.
Well, you must be part snowman. I don't know.
But I'm fat. I'm built for this weather.
We'll just call you the Michelin man. How's that?
I've been called him and I are separated at birth.
Well, guys, great holidays. I had an opportunity to drive down to North Carolina to see my son. Pete, have you ever driven the Virginia Turnpike there in West Virginia?
I've driven so many of them. Yes, I have. The biggest thing that amazes me about Virginia is right after the welcome sign, the very next big thing is radar detectors are illegal in the state. It's like, okay.
Exactly. And you see signs that say, your speed is being watched from aircraft. That's kind of hilarious. Well, we drove through West Virginia down to North Carolina, which I tell you what, sometime on another show, we've got more time, I will talk with you a little bit more detail about our drive. But it was the true road trip experience. We had a little bit of everything. But as I was going to say, if you're driving the Virginia Turnpike through West Virginia, through the mountains, don't look down, because apparently in West Virginia, they don't believe in guardrails. That's all I'm going to say. And it's a little freaky. That's a little freaky, especially, someone who is not from the mountains and not used to driving in the mountains. But that's okay. Just hang on tight, and we got through it. Well, I talk about an uphill climb, and talk about a mountainous climb. Joining us now also is Jimmy the intern. Jimmy, how you doing, sir?
Well, Tom, that's an interesting question. I'm not doing too bad. I'm ready to rock and roll. My voice is less than cooperative, so we'll see how this goes.
Well, were you just extremely excited about the IU game against win against Jacksonville yesterday? Is that what happened?
No, I am just now waking up. Actually, I was up late doing some writing for the website that I've been working for, and that's about it. Yeah.
The work of a college student is never done. Well, guys, obviously we're going to talk about some of the top college sports stories in 2012. And obviously one of the biggest ones of them all, unfortunately, it's not a joyous conversation, if you will, but it certainly is a conversation that we need to have. And that is certainly the arrest and conviction, I should say, of Mr. One Jerry Sandusky, and you know the passing of Joe Paterno, and on the whole Penn State issue. Joins us on the show every now and then, Mr. Ed Kratz from down at Calkins Media. He's also happens to be the beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Joins us from time to time. And I called him because his wife was a Penn State grad, and he had written an article about it. So I called him, and I asked him to come on the show about when all of this first broke. And he's just kind of been a part and a friend of the show ever since then. But this is an interview that was played back in June 23rd, actually, just right after the conviction of Jerry Sandusky. So we're going to play a little bit of that. We'll get back on the other side here. We're going to talk about that one of the top stories, and you can't have a top 2012 college sports story without this conversation. Fortunately, you know, life makes a full circle, and you became a friend of our show because of this issue, and so we're just wondering if we felt that it was appropriate that we made full circle with you, and obviously you've become a great friend of the show, so you'll be around for a lot more. But Jerry Sandusky trial last night. Late night conviction. I was kind of wondering if we were going to get a conviction before you and I talked today. Real quickly, and I certainly we have some things we want to talk about regarding this trial. What was your feel over the trial, how it was handled? And, you know, I watched the press conference of the prosecutor there. I thought it was very moving and very touching. And you know, yes, I used the word monster earlier on in the show. He got convicted. I think now we can let our PC guard down for a while. When you get convicted of 45 counts of child molestation, I'm sorry, in my opinion, by definition, you become a monster. So I'm glad to see him, tucked away for a long period of time. But overall, how was the local feel there about the whole trial and how it was handled and so forth?
Tom, you know, it's funny you mentioned that that's when I joined the show initially. It was back, I think, in November is when this whole everything came down with Sandusky and then the firing of Paterno. So, yeah, it has come full circle. And my initial reaction to the conviction was I was really glad that they found him guilty, because just watching from afar and reading everything about it, it just seemed like he was guilty and it was the right thing to do. But then you think about some of the cases that have unfolded in the past, some of the high-profile cases that you watch from afar and you think, okay, guilty, and it doesn't turn out that way. It's, for instance, the Casey Anthony trial, you would think that, hey, she seemed guilty, but the jury didn't think that. And you know, going back 18 years or so to the O.J. Simpson trial, you thought he's guilty, but the jury didn't see it that way. And even Roger Clemens, maybe, with the HGH just going before Congress here recently, if for perjury charges, he was found not guilty as well. So these high-profile cases don't always turn out the way you and I think they're going to turn out. In this case, it did, and I'm glad for that. I commend the jury for having the courage to stand up to this man who, let's face it, he was an icon in their own backyard. Sandusky had everything going in his favor in this trial, in my opinion. First of all, it was in his backyard in a tiny little town a handful of miles from State College. Secondly, it was clearly a jury of his peers. You know, we talk about that all the time, and that seems stereotypical, but, you know, these were his peers. 9 of the 12 jurists had Penn State connections. They knew Jerry Sandusky. They knew exactly who he was. You know, there were one retired professor.
All right, that's a portion of our interview with Ed Kratz of Calkins Media talking about one of the biggest stories, certainly in sports history, and certainly of 2012 of the college. I wish we had time to play it all, but for time purposes and trying to get everything in, we just don't have time. So we're going to start with you, Jim, and we're just going to move around the round table here. Briefly, in just a minute or two so we can get everything in here, talk to us about your thoughts about Sandusky, Penn State, and everything that they went through there.
Well, people just were not ready for it. No one around the country was, especially when you look at what Penn State has traditionally been as a paragon of virtue, everything that Joe Paterno held it up as with the Noble Experiment, and that all came crashing down, that illusion, that veneer was all gone when this story hit the media. It tarnished Paterno's legacy, obviously, perhaps irreparably. I think time will tell that a little better as the years go by and we end up getting everything out that we need to know, because I think we will eventually know the truth here about everything that did go on. But it tarnished Paterno's legacy. It ruined Penn State as an institution with the reputation that they try to build, and it could end up, as we go throughout the next couple of years and Penn State's football program deals with a lack of scholarships, that the Penn State football program's decline has not yet come the way it will.
Well, one thing for sure is the story is still being told. All right, Pete, if you can go ahead and give us about a minute or so about your thoughts on this tragedy at State College.
Well, we still don't know fully what's going to happen with this, because if you think about all the big profile cases that have happened, something eventually happens to the person that goes to jail. We had the priests up in Boston, when they went to jail, they got attacked by the inmates. So by far, we're going to be hearing about this again, because, you know, some guy is going to want on his little mantle, oh, I'm the guy who took care of Jerry Sandusky. They may say he's in protective custody. I don't think he's going to be fully protected, so we're going to hear about that. But on the legacy of Penn State football, it is a shame that this did happen, because a lot of people don't like the fact that they didn't get a harsher punishment. I hate to say this, but yes, the coach and some of the staff had knowledge of it, but to punish them this harsh, I don't think so. To take away all them wins, I mean, what does that say to the guys that are in the NFL that played for them that are on, for 4 years I didn't win a game. So that was kind of wrong. I think there was a lot of harshness. It was good to see that they did come back to where they had a winning record, because, believe me, at the beginning of the season, everybody said, they're saying, oh, yeah, they're going to win against this team, and then they ain't going to see nothing again. And they proved a lot of people wrong. So That was a good aspect right there. I think that there's going to be a lot of rebuilding, the lack of scholarships, and then that scar is there. That is the scarlet letter on that program forever.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Josh, $2 bill. Josh, what are your thoughts on the Sandusky trial and Joe Paterno and Penn State there? Josh, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's certainly a travesty. I have a different perspective, and I'm curious to see if I'm the only one who maybe has this viewpoint. Jay Paterno feels like the Penn State family, and we've all heard how he feels the Penn State family's done his dad wrong. If I could ask Jay Paterno one question, it would be this question. Do you hold Jerry Sandusky responsible for Joe Paterno no longer being here? Had Jerry Sandusky not done what he would have done, Joe Paterno wouldn't have got fired, and I believe Joe Paterno would still be alive.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I think we could debate this all day long. Unfortunately, we don't have time to do so. But I think there's no doubt about it that all the events that unfolded, I think, certainly attributed to the death of Joe Paterno. And sadly so, because you talk about a fall from grace, that is certainly that situation there as well. Well, we're going to move on into some of the other top college stories of 2012. You know, we look back over at March and what happened in March Madness and different things. So, Jimmy, what I want to do is talk with you about some of your top stories of 2012 in the college world. Obviously, we talk about UK taking the title, the run for Notre Dame. Notre Dame's run for the title. Talk with us about some of your thoughts about some of the top college stories in 2012.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff from both college football and basketball. I mean, I can start with football since we're dealing with that right now. And Notre Dame, obviously, a couple, you know, about a week and a half away from playing for the national championship. It's going to be really exciting, and it has been all year long. But as you said, the Jerry Sandusky deal was a dominant storyline throughout this year in college football, and Penn State being able to deal with that. Bill O'Brien doing an outstanding job rallying that team and really exceeding expectations from where people thought it would be. But going over to college basketball, there's a lot of good stuff. Obviously, IU coming back, we've talked about that at length. There's UK winning the national championship. Robbie Hummel, a smaller storyline, returning from his injury, being able to have a productive final season, and then just looking around at some of the deals that went on in the college landscape. You mentioned a little bit earlier some of those. Really, it's just been a year that has had a lot of small storylines coming together, a lot of changes when it comes to conference realignment, both in basketball and football, as a macro story. And that's something that we're going to have storylines coming from 4 years to come, just because of how that's ending up. I don't think that story has been written yet either, but just looking at the Big Ten changing with Rutgers and Maryland heading over, imminent breakup of the Big East, Catholic Seven, as it's been said, there's a lot of stuff still in flux in the college landscape in 2012, and it will be that way heading into 2013.
And absolutely, and I'm really excited about the look and feel of college sports in 2013. Obviously, the Big Ten, big changes there. Teams that are added to the Big Ten, certainly not the Big Ten anymore. So that's just gonna—I don't know. Maybe there's gonna be a name change down the road. Maybe not. But it's not the Big Ten. Everybody knows that. All right, Pete, this is your chance to gloat, toot the horn, say I told you so. The leprechaun legend continues. Gold at the end of the rainbow. All descriptions you can use for little green people. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm not going to gloat because we haven't won it yet. That's the big thing. I mean, when we go against an SEC opponent and beat them, then we can sit there and say, hey, this proves why Notre Dame doesn't really need to be in a conference, because we took on some of the biggest, if not the biggest, in every one of the major conferences and beat them. SEC is the only thing left. We got their winner. We'll take them on. I'll tell you right now, man, having been a Notre Dame fan my whole life, growing up, it was the whole, yeah, they're always going to win. They're going to win. And then about when Bob Davey rolled in, there were some really close ones that you're like, okay, Notre Dame will pull this out. They always do. And just started losing them. And it just started happening. And you go through all the coaches, and you're like, oh, they should have won that. And I think about 2005, when we had the Bush push, that was one that they should have won under the old luck, all that, and they didn't. And then fans started doing the, oh, okay, they've let us down. And I've heard, if not once, I've heard probably 40 times from other fans, they're like,
yeah, just waiting for Notre Dame to let them down and break their hearts like they have been in recent years. So it's good to see that, oh, wow, we do still kind of have a mystique about us, and we still can win some games and win some close ones and make it really exciting and have people talking about us. So that's really good. I love that we're number one, but yet we're 8-point underdog. That's a great thing right there. So the whole thing comes around with it, all the stuff that's going on with the team. It's nice that we're not being overshadowed by some of the other stuff that's going on with the conference alignments, with the Sandusky issues, with the, you name it, you fill in all the other blanks. That's a great thing. I love the fact that we've got a winning season and people aren't talking about our coach going to the NFL. I mean, come on, in the last 3 weeks we've heard about Saban possibly going to Cleveland. We've heard Chip Kelly is looking at Kansas City, and you've got a couple others that are top-tier guys that are looking to go to the pros. The great thing is Notre Dame is like going to the pros when you're coaching. So that's what I have to say about that. Talk to me on January 8th, and I'll tell you if I gloat. Because, I'm a Notre Dame fan who's based in realism. I think it's going to be a close game, like I've told everybody else. Whoever wins that game is not going to win by no more than 7 points. So that's where it's going to be.
Absolutely. Well, you know, here's the thing. We want to get Josh's thoughts on the top sports stories of 2012. It is impossible. When you go to put these best of 2012 or whatever, the best of the year sports shows, it is impossible to cover everything and talk about everything. So we just kind of have to move right along. Josh, what are your top stories there in 2012 for the College Arena? I'll give you about a minute or so to go ahead and do that. And then we're going to go to Elizabeth the Greek live, actually, today. A real neat treat for us here at The Balance. So go ahead, Josh.
I think it's the conference alignment, and I'm actually going to make a prediction for 2013, since this is the last Saturday in 2012. By the time next August gets here, the University of Connecticut and the University of Texas will become the 15th and 16th members in the Big Ten Conference, and there will be a name change. Also, I'm curious to see how IU fans react later next week when Kelvin Sampson is named the head coach of the New Jersey Nets, since IU's just now digging out from the mess he left behind at IU.
Well, one thing about coaching the NBA, you don't have to worry about any type of recruiting violations. Jimmy, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I don't know. I saw that the other day, and I was thinking to myself, he's definitely the kind of coach that would do well in the NBA. He did some really good work with Brandon Jennings, and people since then have really loved him as a head coaching candidate throughout the NBA. And I'll say, you know, Kelvin, if you can get a head coaching job, take it. Don't come back to college basketball. You're not welcome. Just basically stay on the other side of that fence, buddy.
All right, well, we're waiting to connect, and Pete, I know you're her agent. are we ready to connect with Elizabeth the Greek?
Hold on.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we get back, we're going to go live with Elizabeth the Greek. Right here on the Balance Radio Network. And it really is a great treat to have her on live with us right here on the Balance Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Dick. Stay tuned. My predictions are coming up. right here on the balance. All right. With the horsepower mom's teeth.
All right. Well, as usual, we always have Elizabeth the Greek, and it is a very unique treat here, end of the year treat, to have Elizabeth the Greek on the air with us live. Elizabeth, are you with us? All right. How are you doing? Was Christmas good for you?
Yep.
What did Santa Claus bring you?
A beach house for my body.
A beach house? Do you have your radio on? You want to turn your radio down? We're getting some feedback.
Maybe it's because Daddy's next to her on the other phone.
go ahead. We need you to just kind of step away there.
I just got a beach house for my body.
All right. That's cool. Well, are you ready to do this week's picks for us?
I also got a mermaid.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
You got the list to read, or am I reading it to her?
You want to go ahead? You can. I've got it here.
Okay, I emailed it to you. I thought we'd let you do it this week. So.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the games to ask. Elizabeth, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. We're going to talk about the NFL first. In the first 1 p.m. game this week, the Baltimore Ravens or the Cincinnati Bengals?
Cincinnati Bengals.
All right. In game number 2, the Houston Texans or the Indianapolis Colts?
Indianapolis Colts.
In the first afternoon game, the Green Bay Packers or the Minnesota Vikings?
Green Bay Packers.
Okay, there's no Monday night game this week, so let's go to another afternoon game. The St. Louis Rams or the Seattle Seahawks?
Seattle Seahawks.
Now, finally, in the Sunday night game, it's the Dallas Cowboys or Washington Redskins?
Washington Redskins.
And there you go. Elizabeth the Greek's picks for this week in the NFL. Now, I want to know who picked those picks.
Elizabeth the Greek.
Now, Elizabeth, tell us how we can find you on Facebook.
Well, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Elizabeth the Greek.
All right. Elizabeth the Greek. A great conversation with her today. Thank you, Elizabeth, for joining us here, for joining us on our New Year's show. And I hope I didn't just lose somebody.
You lost Elizabeth.
I lost Elizabeth. Okay.
And Daddy had to unmute his other phone.
All right. We're good to go. All right. Well, we're going to start with you, Josh. You heard the picks that Elizabeth the Greek made. What are your thoughts?
I thought they were all pretty good picks. I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Hey, she's got a great record. I wish I had here with me what her record is for picks this year. What is it, Pete? Do you know what her record
I
is?
I don't have that on me. It's on my laptop, and my wife currently has the laptop.
Well, I know.
So, right now she's not doing too bad in the bowl predictions. I sent you that, and she picked all those games in advance, and she's well over 70%. So,
all right, Jimmy, real quickly, and I know we got to let you go, and your voice is going too, right along with you there. So, what are your thoughts on the Elizabeth the Greek?
Well, I'm glad she's behind Notre Dame 100% of the way. It hasn't failed yet this year, and we'll see how it ends up playing out. But, yeah, she's evidently clairvoyant. I'm a little impressed by that.
Well, we got to take a break. I think, Pete, you got to go as well?
Yes, I have to take off.
All right, sir. Pete LaFuchsia, thanks for joining us. Jimmy the intern, thanks for joining us. You guys have a great new year, and we'll see you guys in 2013.
Thanks.
All right. Jimmy the intern and Pete LaFuchsia joining us here on the Best of 2012 special right here on The Balance. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to be joined by $2 Bill Josh and as well as Axel, a.k.a. Chad. going to be talking about the Colts, Chuck Pagano, Peyton Manning. We're going to be wrapping up all kinds of sports stories among our conversations in the next hour. So it's an hour you don't want to miss. Guys, if you want to talk about your favorite sports story, tweet us at GBallance or Pro Indy, or you can also give us a call and be on the air with us to talk about your top 2012 sports stories. We'll be right back right here on the Ballance.
That's right, come on. Woo! I know y'all know what I'm talking about. Don't be looking at me like that now.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports. All right, my minions, welcome back to hour number two, the final hour of the final Ballance of 2012. It is so good to have you guys along with us. We're going to be talking some of the top stories of 2012. And we've talked about a lot of them already. Cliff Tanner with Radio Speed Talk had a great conversation about some of the top racing stories in 2012. And just now, we just got off the phone with Jimmy the Intern, Pete LaFuchsia, and Elizabeth the Greek, talking about the top college sports stories in 2012. We're going to move on into some of the other sports stories that we saw covered and some of the top stories that we saw throughout the entire world of sports, and certainly we can bring back up some more racing topics. We can bring up some college football, college basketball topics, really whatever the top stories of 2012 is what we'll engage in conversation. Our number is 917-889-8516. That's the digits you need to know to get on the air with us and talk about the top sports stories in 2012. Give us a call right now, 917-889-8516. We've got a line up, and we'll get you on just as soon as we can. But joining us now, Mr. $2 Bill Josh and Axel. Axel, how you doing, sir? Did you have a good Christmas?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It was a bit snowy, but
a bit.
I was working from home and enjoyed being snowed in and enjoyed being with family.
It was great. I had an opportunity to drive down to North Carolina, and I was just talking about in the last segment, when you drive that Virginia Turnpike, don't look down, my friend. Have you ever driven that before?
No, I heard it's hard on your transmission.
It's hard on your transmission. It's hard on your brakes. It's hard on your ticker. I'm just going to tell you, don't look down, buddy. That's all I'm going to say. It is well worth the experience. But it was a great time and great Christmas. Well, let's jump right into this, guys. 2012, we saw a lot of great sports stories. And obviously, we're going to get into the conversation about Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, and Chuck Pagano. But we also saw here locally, we obviously saw the Indiana Fever hit the national championship. And, Josh, I know that you follow the Indiana Fever for the Ballance, and you cover the Indiana Fever quite regularly. So let's talk a little bit about them. Obviously, it was a top story for the NBA in 2012 for the Indiana Fever to win the championship.
Yeah, so it's an absolutely magical season. It's Kamika Catchings and Katie Douglas got their first WNBA championships after being in the league 11 and 12 years respectively. Of course, Katie Douglas is familiar to Indianapolis residents. She went to Perry Meridian High School, went up to Purdue University. It was an awesome feeling being there. It's a sold-out field house in the WNBA Finals, and I'm even more excited as I believe we're working on in 2013, being able to cover the Fever in a lot more detail as they get next to no local coverage, except maybe on the very last page of the sports section in the Star every other day or something like that.
Well, you know, it takes some time. It takes some weaning, if you will. It is women's basketball. It hasn't been a thing that's been hugely covered, which I agree with you, Josh. Hopefully here at The Balance we can cover it in more detail. Chad, what are your thoughts on Tamika Ketchy saying the Indiana Fever winning the WNBA championship?
Well, I always thought Indianapolis will be getting close to Cleveland in terms of championships till the Colts won their Super Bowl here, and then the Pacers kept making noise, but got to the NBA Finals, came up short, and I think the Fever also went to the WNBA Finals and came up short once. So I was like hoping that there's some breakthrough, and I was there at one of the WNBA games. I think it was the Detroit team, and the team had a lot of character. I mean, they didn't play up and down. I mean, they could weather the storm. If an opponent started off hot, nothing rattled them. That's when I knew. This team has got character. And that was with Katie Douglas on the bench. And that's when I knew, this team could be special. And then they showed it and showed it all the way. And congratulations to all of them. I'm so happy for Indianapolis and for the Fever.
Absolutely. And congratulations to Mika Ketchington. You know, hopefully we can have her on the show here coming up in 2013 as well. She'd be a great interview to have, and we'll make sure that we work on that. So let's get on over to the NFL and what we've been waiting on, what we've been biting our nails for. 2012 top stories of the NFL. Now, I've compiled a list over the last few days of what I believe are my, and it's hard to narrow this down, but obviously one of the top stories, and we will get to that conversation as I get up in my list, Chuck Pagano and Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning. But I want to kind of go through my top five. Guys, certainly feel free to add anything over the next hour. Any thoughts that you may have on your top NFL stories. We're going to try to spend the next hour talking about the NFL, the top stories in the NFL. Obviously, we make a full circle, if you will, the top story being in Indianapolis and the NFL at the beginning of the year. And here at the end of the year, one of the top stories in the NFL is also circled around Indianapolis. Obviously, the Super Bowl came right here to Indianapolis. Had a great time in Super Bowl Village. Chad, you and I had an opportunity to go down there to Super Bowl Village and had just an awesome time down there. You look at the you had the Giants and the Patriots. Really, in my opinion, another classic Super Bowl. And you look at the fantastic play of the rookie quarterbacks, RG3 and Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, and just a lot of different things. So it is kind of hard to narrow those down. But I came up with my top five, and we'll go from there. So I want to start. Again, unfortunately, this is a sad story, but it's certainly one of the top stories in the NFL here recently, and that's Javon Belcher murder-suicide. One of the ugliest off-field incidents in the history of the game hit the Chiefs back in December. Belcher, an undrafted free agent linebacker from Maine, in his fourth year in the league, first killed his girlfriend and mother of his three-month-old daughter, shooting her 9 times, by the way. He took his own life by putting a gun to his head in front of coaches Romeo Crennel and Gary Gibbs and GM Scott Pennally in front of the Chiefs complex. Belcher's tragic loss of his senses led to all sorts of discussions about gun control, relationships, and mental health. Afterwards, several players turned in their guns. So this isn't a political show, so really we don't really need to get in the political aspects of gun control or not gun control. But what I do want to know is, here's the thing. We're, on one hand, we look at the NFL and then the moment of silence and then what all the Chiefs did, and maybe rightly so. It was a suicide. It was a tragic event. However, we talked about it here on this show. He murdered he's a murderer. And so we got to keep that in perspective when having this conversation. But I start with you, Josh. Certainly one of the top stories in the NFL, the Javon Belcher murder-suicide.
That's absolutely one of the top stories of the year in the NFL. And it's a very tragic story. And with this being 2012, if I could get back to the Javon Belcher story, as it fits into a larger theme during the month of December. On this last Saturday in December, as you look back at all the great stories, all the great times we've had in 2012, let's remember all the people that are going to go into Monday, and it's going to be really hard in Newtown, Connecticut, for the families in Kansas City, not as many, for the families of the mall shooting in Portland. For all of us, we're excited to go into 2013. For all of them, 2013 is going to be a hard year. It's going to be their first complete year without whether it's their daughter, their mom, their dad, whatever the story may be. But I just think it's weird that Javon Belcher fell into this month and those events happened in the same month too.
Absolutely, and it's a sad story that we have to cover that. But, you know, it is a one of the top sports stories, unfortunately, with some negative connotation. Axel, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I know it is. It might be the biggest headline, but I just don't feel it right to kind of glorify the story of a murderer, saying that it is the top story. When I prefer to talk about the more positive stories of hogging the headlines than the negative ones. And while it is worthy of discussion and it brings up a lot of non-sports related discussion, from a sports perspective, I don't think, I mean, Javon Belcher should be glorified or in any form or fashion by tagging a number one to his name, in my opinion. And I just don't think that incident is any different than any other senseless shooting that has taken place around the country. Yeah, that's just my opinion.
No, and that's what we ask. And I couldn't agree with you more, actually. It's just unfortunate that we do have to mention that when mentioning when we talk about the top stories, a lot of times you got to throw in the negative. And, you know, I'm in my same list there, which we're not going to really get into a conversation, and maybe we will on another show about concussions and so forth. And we look at the suicide of Junior Seau as well. Again, another tragic situation in the NFL. Unfortunately, the NFL was riddled with kind of negative coverage, negative press coverage. And it's no different in my next one on the list here. Obviously, the New Orleans Saints bounty scandal. Oh, those wacky, wacky Saints in their 3 years of and shenanigans under Coach Sean Payton and former defense coordinator Craig Williams. From the time the NFL announced its finding in March, this story has never went away, and which is to have such a weird outcome and the dumb outcome on top of all that. All things considered, while it is impossible to get into all the particulars of this, Chad and Josh, of this story, the Saints were wrong by not ending the program after 2009 season when the NFL investigated them originally. At the same time, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell went way too far in penalizing players, most of which had little or nothing to do with actually administrating the bounty program. So, we start with you now, Chad. Thoughts on bounty?
Well, I do think there is no smoke without a fire. And based on all the witness accounts, there was a bounty program in place. Where Roger Goodell messed up is basically not serving as judge, jury, and executioner. He abused the power a tad too much and actually put Paul Tagliabue, who ruled on that later, in a tough spot, to be honest with you. And Tagliabue kind of had to save face for the NFL, as well as while not disagreeing with the NFL. I mean, he did agree that there was a bounty program. Jonathan Wilma will not let it go. He's going to fight and fight and fight. But Jonathan Wilma has to understand if the case goes outside the confines of New Orleans, he's not going to get much sympathy if the case gets retried and retried several times and it comes to some kind of jury. And I bet he might be willing to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And then basically you will set a bad precedent for NFL being in exempt status, for Congress or Supreme Court to get involved. And basically it won't show as a private entity anymore, and it could just complicate matters. And basically if you are part of it and a coach comes out and says, you are part of it. I mean, I do believe Greg Williams, based on his history, has had a history of establishing bounties now in Buffalo, where he coached as a defensive coordinator, Washington Redskins, where he coached as a defensive coordinator. But the only thing is, they could only have more evidence or more testimonies based on what New Orleans did. And why didn't Sean Payton dispute any of the facts? Basically, he knew that they were running it, and he knew that they were won, and he knew that they didn't stop it. And I just think Drew Brees lost a lot of fan goodwill by just supporting everyone blindly. But he probably is a great politician. His mom is a lawyer, and he knows the right things to say. And he is head of the NFL Players Association as well, along with Jeff Saturday. And he's opening a restaurant in New Orleans. So I didn't expect anything different. He's going to be a businessman and politician down the road. And I do think, like I said, there can be any smoke without a fire. And I do think that at some point, the Saints players have to accept some a level of guilt. They were grown-up men. It's not like they couldn't say no when a coach instituted a bounty program. So I don't buy the fact that only the coaches and management are to blame.
Absolutely. And it certainly brings up to the question that we have given too much power, which is another topic for another show, but we have given way too much power to the NFL commissioner, and that being one Roger Goodell. There has to be a meeting of owners and players association that limit the dictator powership of Roger Goodell or future commissioners down the road. Josh, your thoughts on the bounty scandal of 2012, Bounty Gate, we call it.
I used to agree with you, Chad. After reading some more and after Paul Tagliabue's decision, I couldn't disagree more. If I could, I'm going to take the complete opposite side of the story. If there was really a Bounty Gate, if there was really anything going on, if the players were really guilty of anything, Paul Tagliabue would not have ruined his tarnish and his reputation as the greatest National Football League commissioner of all time and voided their suspensions. The fact that the guy who is widely considered the greatest NFL commissioner of all time would void their suspension makes me think Roger Goodell and the NFL know their line. The only reason they're suspending Greg Williams indefinitely is because now he doesn't have access to the media podium, whereas they reinstate him. He could go to the microphone and lay the fact out straight. Roger Goodell knew he was lying, and I, for one, Jonathan Vilma, encourage you to go to the Supreme Court. The NFL is the most popular sport in America. It's maybe the most American thing in America other than baseball. Roger Goodell should not have the power to be the judge, jury, and executioner and the firing squad at the same time.
I absolutely agree. Go ahead, Josh.
I encourage her to be, whether it be through congressional action or something, either Goodell to be forced to step aside or forced to appoint a new position, a new cabinet position, if you will, in charge of discipline. It's a joke that he has all the power.
I couldn't agree with you more. Again, certainly one of those things that we have to look at, and we'll have plenty of time to analyze it here on this show. Well, you know, my next story is kind of a fun story to talk about, but it's also a very serious story. And obviously what I'm talking about here is the replacement refs fiasco, the disaster that the NFL spent the entire offseason, all of training camp, and the first 3 weeks of regular season haggling it with its locked out officials over what seemed to be very little money. The real reason was a complicated pension issue the league is trying to get around and circle around and dance around. Finally, after the replacement refs were blamed for everything, including Green Bay. Oh, my God. That was just so obvious. Losing to Seattle and obviously you look at the what was the writer? He was Michael Silver with Yahoo. Exchange with fellow grad, Cal grad, Aaron Rodgers. I'll tell you what, to the rest of the unrest in the Middle East and global warming, all of that stuff going on this year. But the NFL, oh my goodness, what a disaster the replacement refs were. Good thing otherwise we might have even lost more time. Can you imagine what would have happened with if they would have stuck around all the way through the Super Bowl? All right, we're going to start with you, Josh. Your thoughts on the replacement ref, Pony Dance.
I thought it was a relatively humorous chapter in the football, even if it is another example of Roger Goodell maybe being not quite good enough to be the commissioner. He was just kind of pointed that way because he was the altar boy for Tagliabue. But, Tom, can you imagine what would have been like if they'd still be here? You might have the Cleveland Browns sitting here at 14-2 just because the replacement official goes, I like Cleveland. I don't like Green Bay. I'll make sure Green Bay loses every week.
I like the dog mound. All right, Chad, what are your thoughts on this pony dance we called the replacement ref fiasco?
Well, I mean, they were set up to fail, unfortunately. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, it's like an intern for a lawyer asking to take the lawyer's job in court. So you are. So that's why I feel like trying to fit a.
When you're pooping
your brain. That's why I feel that they were set up to fail. So, and that's why things turned out the way they did.
You know, I played this soundbite while you were talking, and I apologize. I went to play it just kind of in the background, but it certainly does come to – it's perfect!
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
You poop for real! My goodness, what was going on?
They sure pooped on the field.
Well – the ref must have mistaken a turd for a flag or something. All right, we absolutely digress. Oh my goodness! But we're gonna take a break, guys, and when we get back, we're gonna get into some of the best conversations, really, that we had going on in 2012, and that being that of Peyton Manning. Obviously, leaving the Indianapolis coach, the hiring of Chuck Pagano, and the things that he's gone through, Andrew Luck, and all of that, all at the same time. You know, it's been a great story. It's been a great run for Andrew Luck, and certainly we're going to get into that conversation here in just a moment. So we're going to take a break, guys, and when we get back, we're going to jump right in to more of the best NFL stories of 2012. We want to hear from you. Give us a tweet or a Facebook or call us here on the air, and we'd be glad to have you on the air and talk with you about your favorite top stories of 2012 right here on The Balance. Don't go away. The last half hour of 2012 is right around the corner.
County Road 233 under my feet. Nothing on this wide rock but a little old me. I got 2 miles till he makes bail. And if I'm right, we're headed straight for him.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster.
That are in my age genre definitely remember the $6 million man. I used to have a $6 million man lunchbox. He was incredible. He could do anything. $6 million man. How about a $31 million man? How about a $100 million man? Well, that's what we had right here in Indianapolis. Mr. Peyton Manning, number 18. You know, it's hard to look at this story. I'm happy on both ends of this story, and I'm sad on both ends of the story. You know, 14 years here in Indianapolis, a lot happened over that 14 years. And we look back at the career of Peyton Manning here at Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, we would believe that will go into the Hall of Fame as an Indianapolis Colt, which we would hope. And certainly, you know, just everything – fell apart for Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. We talk about how that decision came about. Obviously, one of the top stories in the NFL, certainly on the national scale and on the local scale here in Indianapolis. So, Chad, we start with you. The retiring of Peyton Manning the leaving of Peyton Manning from the Indianapolis Colts and later to sign with the Denver Broncos. This is something that I think Jim Irsay wanted. We think, a lot of us think, that Jim Irsay pushed Peyton Manning out of town, that he wanted to work this out. Perhaps, maybe, he didn't want to stay after all. So you look at two sides of the coin there. Perhaps, maybe, it was Peyton Manning that was going to Jim Irsay and saying, hey, I think my time here is done. It's time for me to go elsewhere. So, Chad, Peyton Manning leaves Indianapolis, is now a Bronco, could go to the Super Bowl as a Bronco. How incredible of a story would that be? Go ahead.
Yeah, but what is lost here is, one, Jim Irsay is a better football owner than people give him credit for. He made an intelligent decision. He made the right decision. The right decision was to stick with Peyton for a year and pay him that $25 or $23 million that he paid Peyton. And that was out of goodwill. And for all that Peyton had done, no questions asked. And and then came the year where he had to take the risk. And he had probably the best quarterback in the draft since Peyton Manning available for him at number one. And he made an intelligent decision, talked around to several scouting GMs across the league, and came to that decision because he felt with the declining talent levels with the Colts, somewhat of a reloading, if not a rebuilding or a revamping process had to take place. And it wouldn't be fair to Peyton to be part of a reloading or revamping this late in his career. And it wouldn't be fair to bring in a new GM and coach and ask them to work around Peyton either. So I think though he didn't handle it the best way in public, the decision that Jim Irsay made was absolutely the right decision for both Peyton and for both Luck, so that Luck doesn't have to worry about sitting behind Peyton and can learn by being thrown in the line of fire just like Peyton did. And Peyton going to a little more established team, which is not revamping and reloading. And at this stage of his career, Peyton went to the right team where he didn't have to run around a porous offensive line like Andrew Luck is, and didn't have to take that much beating, and a little more rounded team in the Broncos. Even when Peyton did not leave like Brett Favre, and that is what is most endearing to Colts fans. He left with grace, he left with class, and Irsay did send him out with grace and class too. And so, rightfully so. And so, but eventually the decision was a win-win for both and was the right decision, in my opinion.
And I absolutely agree. I here's the thing where I'm at with Peyton Manning. I think the time possibly was for him to retire. We thought that at the time. But now we look at him in the success he's having at Denver. And as odd and weird as it is to see him wearing orange instead of blue, he's doing some great things for the city of Denver as a Bronco. So I look at this as a positive thing, as you do, Chad. And you're right. Jim Irsay doesn't get the credit for being a very intelligent man in that he should. And, you know, we look at some of the decisions that have been made. Obviously, when we drafted Peyton Manning, it was like, oh, my God, why are we drafting Peyton Manning? Why? Well, obviously, we now know why. And, you know, say what you want about Bill Polian. I think Bill Polian was the second side, the other half of the brain in that organization. And I think he's a great, great thinker and strategy guy. And, you know, nothing against Grissom and his move in here. Maybe it was time for Bill Polian to go as well. But we saw a big change and just a total uprooting of the entire Indianapolis Colts organization. But now we look and we say, wow, not bad, not bad. All right, Josh, Peyton Manning retires, or we say retires. He didn't retire. He just left Indianapolis. So we'll just say Peyton Manning leaves Indianapolis. Go ahead, Josh.
I agree. It's a good thing for both sides. I'm still struggling with it a little bit. I'm really glad Andrew Luck is here. I think it was the right choice. I think if Peyton Manning was here this year, the Colts wouldn't be 10-5. I don't think Peyton Manning could have won with all the rookies. I think he would have got frustrated. We've all seen Peyton Manning get frustrated and get into his offensive lineman or wide receiver space. I think that would have maybe crippled or really hurt a young rookie. So I think it would have been an absolute disaster for Peyton Manning to come back, and I think Andrew Luck's a great rookie quarterback. I don't think he's the best rookie quarterback in the NFL this year. I think that would go to Russell Westbrook of the Seattle Seahawks, who I predict to win the Super Bowl. But here's where I'm struggling with Peyton Manning. I'm a Colts fan. I'm a diehard Colts fan. I became a Colts fan back in 1991 when they went 1-15. The 1-1 was on a technicality. They didn't win there, and that went on the field. I'm a Colts fan. I can't root for Peyton. I'm sorry. I can't do it. I wish him nothing but the best of luck in Denver. Maybe I'm the only Colts fan, but I find myself hoping Denver loses. And I cannot, for whatever reason, root for Peyton Manning when he's wearing Bronco colors. No ill feelings. I just can't root for you.
Just can't make it happen, huh? Well, you know, all I can say is I'm just biting at, you know, as a guy that hosts a radio show and a sports blogger and a sports guy fan in general, I am just biting at the bit to see the playoffs come out and come together with Indianapolis and Denver meeting Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning. Oh, my goodness. That is going to be an incredible story to cover. And I'm going to tell you, win or lose, that's going to be the biggest media hype ever. Well, as we know, Peyton Manning went out to the left Indianapolis, went out to the Broncos, and created another quarterback story.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Well, that wasn't the soundbite that I was wanting to play. I was wanting to play the Tim Tebow rap, and I don't know where that went.
Playoffs?
Well, apparently that's labeled wrong. Well, I don't have the Tim Tebow rap. Well, anyway, we
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
We'll make our own Tim Tebow rap. Yeah, the quarterback out in Denver really thought he was cool. Now, he's out in New York looking like a fool. I don't know. I'm not a rapper, guys. You don't want me to rap. You want me to rap, to talk. So we're going to start with you. Chad, Tim Tebow.
Well, when Tim Tebow kept kneeling, he probably said, "Dear Lord, I hope the Broncos do well in 2012, too, but I didn't think Peyton Manning was part of the solution." And actually, Tim Tebow was given the choice whether he wanted to go to the Jaguars, who were giving a better fourth-round pick for John Elway, or to the Jets. The Jets kind of hoodwinked him because the coach was not on board, but the GM and the owner apparently wanted Tebow. They would rather make headlines off the field than on the field. I guess, I don't know, who holds a press conference for a backup quarterback? Seriously. And so basically, the Jets invited the trouble, and for no fault of Tim Tebow and their teammates bashing him and all the stuff, I mean, that's the thing when Rex Ryan encourages his players to speak up by being a player's coach. When things are going good, it's all good. When things are going south, that's when you find out that it's a bad practice. And there was a reason why Bill Polian and good organizations like Steelers, Patriots, Colts keep things under wraps in the locker room. So, and Tim Tebow is finding out that probably he should have gone to the Jaguars, and they still want him, and he probably will terminate his contract with the Jets and go there. But I do think Tebow deserves a chance. But unfortunately, you have to devalue your passing game and your wide receivers while working with him, because he can't run a conventional offense. So his best chance is being a fullback, wildcat kind of quarterback in the NFL. He has to embrace the role pretty quickly so that he can be useful for NFL offenses.
And that certainly is a question that we're going to definitely be following. You know, obviously the biggest question, will Manning win his fifth NFL MVP as a Bronco? How big of a story would that be? And where in the world will Tim Tebow be? I'm with you, Chad. I think it's going to be Jacksonville, and we'll get into that as well. Well, obviously that was one of Tebow mania was huge, and not so much anymore, but, you know, he had his 10 seconds of fame, and I honestly like Tim Tebow. I think he's a great quarterback. We'll see what happens with Tebow mania. We're right on the edge of our seats. We are waiting to find out what goes on with Tebow mania. Well, one of my top stories in my top two stories of 2012 in the NFL has to be that of Coach Chuck Pagano, head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. What a story this has unraveled to be. And even as a media person, that if I wasn't in my backyard, I would still be following this story. It's getting all kinds of national attention. And obviously, you know what we're talking about if you follow the NFL at all, and that is Chuck Pagano having to step aside. He's back now. He's addressed the team. I do actually believe he might even be on the sidelines, or he'll at least be in some sort of coaching capacity for the Colts tomorrow against the Texans. Now, we look at him being able to step aside for leukemia, and that was a brought a lot of awareness to leukemia and in what it's all about. But the fact is that his stepping aside, I think, has been a huge inspiration. And he, in my opinion, is the prime candidate for the Coach of the Year and will go down in history as the Coach of the Year coaching the fewest games, yet is the Coach of the Year. And in my opinion, that's why that's a top story, is because the inspiration that Chuck Pagano, Chuck Strong, brought to the Indianapolis Colts have brought them to where they're at now. Go ahead, Chad.
Yes, but I don't think Pagano should be the Coach of the Year. Bruce Arians should be. Bruce Arians, I mean, it's the most unpredictable of situations that he had to basically assume ownership of while maintaining the focus of the team and still keeping the focus around Chuck. And he used that as motivation. I mean, to me, Bruce Arians, the job he did is phenomenal, not just having to tutor a young rookie quarterback like Luck. He's like a Mad Max scientist, Mad Scientist kind of guy, with a great motivator. And for some reason, I'm just kind of like a little concerned that though Chuck Pagano was the reason for the motivation that Bruce Arians used to motivate, just hearing a different voice in the locker room, I just hope the Colts would respond the same way moving forward as well. And but I would not be shocked at all if Bruce Arians got the Coach of the Year, and Bruce Arians got a lot of head coaching offers, including possibly the Chargers and those kind of teams that have the quarterback but have failed to produce a good head coach. So.
Well, one thing is for sure, and I like what he's done with the Indianapolis Colts, but I think you're dead right. Maybe he'll keep out of loyalty, but let's face it, he's in the NFL, and it's his career, and he's going to get paid. He'd be stupid to not take the money. So I don't think we're going to be seeing a situation where Bruce Arians is going to be with the Indianapolis Colts next year. I'd be greatly surprised. Josh, real quickly, we got some other stories to cover. Chuck Pagano and his motivation in 2012.
I think it's a great story. As it brought awareness to the team, he had brought in a lot of money to the IU Cancer Center. I think Bruce Arians should be the Coach of the Year. I'm one Colts fan. I don't get the love for Chuck Pagano. He was here for 3 games, and we lost 2 of them. I'm glad to see him back. He's going to be you were wondering what he's going to be doing tomorrow, Tom. He's the official head coach. Bruce Arians is now back to the offensive coordinator. So when there's a challenge flag thrown, or there's somebody wants to talk to the referee tomorrow, that'll be Chuck Pagano, and I think it's a great story, even if I don't get what the city of Indianapolis is so in love with the guy who's only coached the team for 3 games for.
Well, you know, and that's certainly a side of the coin and open for debate, that which we can debate on future shows. But one thing about it, in my opinion, his motivation has played a huge role in the success of the Indianapolis Colts this year. Well, you know, like we did throughout the show today, we have talked about some, not necessarily the top stories nationally, but some of the top stories that the balance has covered. And, you know, we covered it, and we don't have the sound bite for this particular interview, unfortunately, but we had an opportunity to talk with the head coach of the Newcastle Little League team that went to the World Series, and it was a great interview. So, in my opinion, for the balance of 2012, Newcastle going to the World Series was a great, great opportunity to cover those kids here locally going to the Little League World Series as well. Now, also, what we did here at The Balance is we had an opportunity, and you may have missed this, but we think that this certainly lands in one of our top interviews, if you will, of 2012. We had a great interview with the head coach of Silver Creek High School, which is down by Louisville. Now, you guys might think that the Colts have had some losing streaks, or you might think that there's losing streaks out there, but eventually they come back and win. Well, all I'm going to tell you about this went losing streak. Can you imagine, guys, having a losing streak that lasted over a half of a century, 50 years? We're going to go to that interview right now. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about this incredible losing streak. We're coast to coast right here on The Balance. I tell you what, I came across your story, and I want you to talk with us a little bit about it. But we're talking now, joins us Mike Donahue, head coach of the Silver Creek High School Dragons. And, you know, typically we talk about this, we've been talking about this earlier today, Mike, and, you know, some of the teasers and stuff that we've been running. You know, the Colts are used to some losing streaks. The Hoosiers are used to some losing streaks. And maybe some high schools are used to some losing streaks, but nothing. And we thought, you know, when you see a losing streak like this get broken and get beat, it is incredible. 70 years, now correct me if I'm wrong on this, it has been 70 mm-hmm. years since your school has won a high school football game. Wow. First of all, that must have been an incredible win. Second of all, walk me through that. 70 years, that's just unreal.
Well, what makes it different is that actually the reason it's 70 years, in 1942 is the last win, and then World War II broke out, and they decided to not play football anymore. So we didn't have football in Silver Creek High School until 2007 when they resurrected the program, went junior high first. We went 3 years as a JV program. 2011 was our first varsity year, which we went 0-10, and then this year, and then won our first game last week.
Now, that game was kind of like you had to play it in two separate days. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was like a marathon. We were ahead 30-12. We had just scored, and when we just scored, they had lightning, and the lightning meters went off. So the officials stopped the game, and then we met the two coaches, the two athletic directors, and the police chief of Pekin, the community we were in, called his dispatcher to call the weather service, and they said if we waited the required 30 minutes, which you have to do when there's lightning, you have to vacate the field for 30 minutes, they said the storm was so great and had a lot of wind and everything else, we would be in dire straits. So mm-hmm. at that time, the decision was made to suspend the game. We talked to the officials, who unfortunately had already booked themselves for the morning, so we couldn't play until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So with 7:34 on the clock, we had to kick off to Eastern. And fortunately, in three plays, my middle linebacker, Jason Gent, intercepted the pass and went 60 yards for a touchdown. That was our first score of the day. And then we marched it down the field and was able to score again. The waning moments, they scored. And then I elected to go for a victory formation and ended up being 44-18.
Well, you know, that's got to be an exciting win for the kids. And, you know, to see that coming in the loom of that win, talk to me about the celebration after the game and both the locker room and in the community. And obviously you guys have made national attention, but to talk to me about the post game, what were some of the reactions? What was going on? Did it really sink in that you guys had won, or did you think that maybe there was a malfunction here, or what? Did you guys really have the grasp of the reality that after 70 years, you guys had finally won your first game at Silver Creek?
Well, absolutely, we knew, because I knew, because I was completely drenched. The ice bucket got put on, and it was a little chilly here. But as I told the kids, I'll take that cold feeling any day. A lot of the seniors who have been with the program since it started were hugging each other and crying. What was really...
All right, and that's the head coach of Silver Creek High School down by Louisville. Their first win, Chad, after 70 years. And you can hear that whole interview on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com, or on iTunes as well in the archive section of our show. So what a great interview that was, and a great win in 2012 for that. Well, Chad, do you have any thoughts on that real quickly?
Well, it's a phenomenal accomplishment.
after going through so many years without a program. My goodness, it's got to be revitalizing for that school. And wasn't that a Little League World Series? Isn't that a baseball?
Yes. Newcastle, right.
Wasn't it on ESPN, too?
Yep, it was. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I didn't pay attention because they lost pretty quickly once they got to the World Series.
Yes.
And but it's a phenomenal accomplishment for a school that nearly doesn't have the same level of funding like a Carmel school or something like that. So.
All right, Josh. I know you're a big high school football fan. Real quickly, what are your thoughts on that?
What an awesome accomplishment that is after going so many years without a program to win their first football game. And they're just one of many great stories, one of which I'm right in the Indianapolis area. We haven't talked about it. We might not get to it next week.
Okay, later, baby. I'm talking on the phone.
But I know, Axel, I know that you got to go. So we're going to go ahead and give you the first rant here as we come into our 5-minute rant. We each get 1 minute over the next 5 minutes. So go ahead, Axel, give us your rant about anything you'd like, sir.
Yeah. My rant is, why haven't we talked about the Olympics and Michael Phelps becoming the most decorated athlete? If you have, I have missed it. And the other thing is...
I missed that. I had it on my list, too. Go ahead, buddy. Thank you for bringing that up. Certainly one of the top stories. Go ahead.
Yes, it's more international, not just what boxes down America. And the other thing is basically, what a phenomenal story for both Peyton Manning and Adrian Peterson to come back the way they have and being in MVP conversation. And I think they should do a co-MVP and a co-comeback player of the year for both of them. And they deserve it. And... I just want Peyton to win one more ring and then go away so that we can all Coles fans can rally behind the laundry instead of the player that we all got endeared to. So.
All right, Mr. Axel, we'll see you next year right here on The Balance. All right, $2 all bill, right. Josh, you got 1 minute. Ran away, sir.
One story that we didn't get to talk about a whole lot today, and I'm hoping we can get him scheduled to be on the show here in the next couple of weeks. Ted Carrison of Marion University Knights won the NAIA National Championship a couple weeks ago. The school's first ever national championship. They've only had a football program for 5 years. And he promptly left the very next day to go coach Walsh University in Ohio. I'm anxious to see who Marion University is going to bring in to be their next coach.
All right,
go
ahead, Josh. Well, obviously, there's a lot of stories that we didn't get to talk to. My list was so long. And thank you, Chad, for bringing that up. The Olympics. I even said last night, the Olympics is on my list to do. Obviously, some of the top stories. LeBron James. That's right, LeBron James. Michael Phelps, Gabby Douglas, so much more. You're right, we could have talked all day long about some of the top stories. Obviously, LeBron James winning an MVP title. We got the NFL rookies, RG3 and Andrew Luck doing a great job as well. Peyton Manning's comeback, obviously, that we did. These are just some of the things. Tim Tebow was on my list. Michael Phelps was on my list. I don't even know what that means. Obviously, the Super Bowl we talked about. We talked about Penn State and the sex scandal there. Javon Belcher, we talked about. Jeremy Lin, we didn't get to Lin's sanity. And I do apologize we didn't get to Lin's sanity. That's some of the other things that we had going on here at The Balance this year, the top stories of 2012. Well, guys, my rant is this, and it's very, very simple. We have another year. We survived the end of the world. Of course, I'm joking when I say that. But one thing is for sure, we had an election this year. We had a lot of things happen. In 2013, if you let God be in charge of you and your family and your household, you'll be amazed at the things you can accomplish in 2013. Remember to be safe. Don't drink and drive this New Year's Eve. And, guys, we're going to see you next year in 2013 for another great year, probably the best year we've ever had, as we enter year number 5 for The Balance right here on the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. My minions, all I want to tell you is Happy New Year. Keep it safe. We'll see you next year.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자, 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자, 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자, 그런 반.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.